La di da di da di da di da di da di dee. Oh yeah, once again it's Sweet Sweet Stacy's Thursday here on the Paris Podcast, The Truth About Markets. Max and Stacy. Stacy, what's happening over there?
Hi honey, it's my day.
My day, my day, my day, talking about.
Is that a song?
My day, bump, bump. Ba-da, so, you know, this BitTorrent is a good service, I must say.
Oh, it's fantastic. I was just thinking of that. We saw a great television series, television movie from Britain last night called The Fundamentalist. Came out last week on Channel 4.
That's Britain. Right.
It was fantastic, wasn't it?
It was really good. I learned a lot about this word, fundamentalism, what it means, history of it. And I think it's a good video for everyone in America to see. Of course, they would never play it in America.
No.
Because it asks some pretty pertinent questions about the current conflicts around the world. And, you know, this is not part of the American political landscape. They need to, you know, in America, they want to keep it all very, 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 you know, and fundamentalism. It is they have a fundamentalist country over there. So they wouldn't want to educate the masses about the roots of fundamentalism and what it's all about. But so this film, which is very good. Do we remember that what it was called? Was it called Fundamentalism?
No, it was called The Fundamentalist.
Right.
And it starts in America. That's where fundamentalism, they claim, started, and they're the same. They're the dialogue they use, the fundamentalist evangelical Christians, they sound exactly like the Islamic fundamentalists, but there are some Buddhist monk militants.
That's right.
I didn't realize this, but
that's right.
They're new. They came onto the scene in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And who were they inspired by? Not by Al-Qaeda, who no. Blair and Bush argue all the time to their populations that Al-Qaeda is an evil ideology that is spreading around the world and inspiring people to commit all sorts of acts of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Buddhist militants were inspired by Blair and Bush.
That's right.
As were the Hindu militants.
Yeah, that's right. This whole new wave of fundamentalist violence is inspired by Blair and Bush, not by Al-Qaeda. So, as you pointed out yesterday, when Blair says that Muslims are unique in this fundamentalism and violence, it's completely false.
Actually, the Islamic fundamentalists were kind of late to the game compared to other fundamentalists.
Mm. Yeah, they go back to, I guess, 1925 in the Scopes trial.
Yeah,
in the U.S., and which was Darwinism versus literal interpretation of the Bible. And the Bible won, and this was the beginning of the fundamentalist movement in America, and they published something like, I don't know, a dozen pamphlets called The Fundamentals, because I thought there was necessity to go back to the biblical fundamentals of the ancient text, the virgin birth, etc. And this was somewhat quiet for a while, and then in the... of course, Ronald Reagan in 1980 saw a huge pool of potential voters, so he politicized this group, and you had the beginning of a political bloc, which has been exploited in politics since Reagan's time, and it has led to America becoming a theocracy, effectively. And so you've got this a theocracy in America doing battle with a theocracy in other countries, including a radicalized group of Hindus, a radicalized group of Buddhist monks. So it fits into what we've been talking about, this global insurrection against corporate occupation. This global insurrection is everywhere in the globe, and within all of these countries are groups that have become violent and radical, due to the influences, in large part, to Bush and Blair.
Exactly, but because they do point out another thing, is that Christianity is only 2,000 years old, but Hinduism and Buddhism are 7,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They've never had a history of violence, and now there is a violent strain emerging. And actually, the Buddhist monk, what was the first his first inspiration for turning to violence? Not Blair and Bush. He did mention them, but his number one was Coca-Cola.
Yeah, he mentioned Coca-Cola. Well, that brings up, so there's a global insurrection, and then there's the corporate occupation.
Yeah.
And the corporate occupation is this force of globalization and monopolization and neo-feudalism, the blanketing of the globe with a few bankers and their clients to homogenize the globe's culture. And so this is what ends up being the tension between the forces of globalization of this cadre of a few bankers and brands versus everyone in these countries who feel what's driving this fundamentalism from the beginning has been fear and paranoia, mm-hmm. that their local identities will get subsumed by this crushing concrete wave of brands. And so the tension rises, and then they are forced to push back, ultimately in a violent way. And so really, they go through this this issue, I thought, in a very good way. So on BitTorrent, the deal is that BitTorrent is free, and you can download this movie for free. I believe because it's on Channel 4, they have said that they don't mind.
UK Nova is the site where you can download this stuff. And yes, BBC and Channel 4 have said they won't go after so-called illegal downloaders because they're public service organizations and their content is available for free anyway.
So there you have another competition to the Hollywood model, mm-hmm. with content that's basically free.
Yeah.
And BitTorrent as a service is free. And
BitTorrent is the software,
mm-hmm.
and the UK Nova is the service where you can download it,
mm-hmm.
for free.
Yeah, I mean, I recommend it. Really, I mean, this is the best thing I've seen in a couple of years. The fundamentalists on Channel 4.
It's not really quite free because though you don't have to pay money, you do have to contribute back to the community. You have to allow your computer to be used to upload the product back to the community. So.
Right, you're joining the network.
Yeah.
And you're sharing electrons.
Yeah.
And electrons are virtually free. So the only thing that determines your success in the community, in the network, is your ability to give as equal to your ability to take.
Exactly.
So in that sense, it's a perfectly functioning economy. It has a GDP of zero. Just
yeah.
like photosynthesis has a GDP number of zero.
Yeah.
Now, this is it is very possible to create economies like this where you've got complete balance between give and take amongst all units, all components of the society. It's an illusion, and it's quite a dangerous illusion to put forward this notion that we need to allow certain individuals to chase unlimited wealth with the prospect of lifting all of society's boats, because unfortunately this means unlimited ecological damage and a destruction of society's boats. So this is another example of how, economically speaking, the model being put forward by America and Britain.
Well, you see the difference just there. I mean, that you can create an economic model that inspires people to contribute to society, not to become militants and bomb each other and kill each other, like the American model clearly does. Because whatever they say, the fact is, Blair, Bush, and Coca-Cola have inspired Buddhist monks in Sri Lanka to turn to violence.
Right. But yeah, you know, 90% of the U.S. GDP is consumption.
Exactly.
And consumption, it's all take and no give. The only thing you're giving back is you're contributing to the poo stream.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the BitTorrent. BitTorrent, electrons in, electrons out.
Uh-huh.
In the meantime, I get to watch content that's brilliantly produced, and knowledge increases. The U.S. consumer is junk food in, poo out.
Mm-hmm.
So the poo is not worth anything. It's even toxic poo. It's not even good enough for fertilizer because it's got so many. It's laced with so many chemicals. So it's not. There's not economically. It's not efficient. And the obesity rate, they say in the U.S. that now 1 in 5. Infants are going to be obese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's junk food in, poo out.
Yeah.
Now, that's not contributing to the economy in any meaningful way. It's all it's doing is it's undermining the economy, undermining the ecology, and undermining that society. Meanwhile, BitTorrent, part of the digital revolution, is another example of an economy that's balanced and functioning, but on a different scale. which is that prices are virtually free to free. I was reading again in the Financial Times today that the big issue that Hollywood has with these new services that allow people to access video for free is that it bypasses the biggest player in Hollywood. Who do you think the biggest player in Hollywood is?
The audience?
Walmart.
Oh, yeah, yeah, from the videos?
35 to 40% of all DVD revenues come from sales at Walmart.
Yeah.
So the studios don't want to piss Walmart off. As a matter of fact, Disney, recently they allowed one of their movies to appear online ahead of their DVD release.
Mm-hmm.
And Walmart cut them off.
Oh, wow.
And they had it was a dispute that went right to the head of the CEO of both companies.
Mm-hmm.
So Walmart wields this incredible axe in this space. And, you know, Walmart, of course, is a huge problem company in that it drains wages from the U.S. It's fanning the flames of trade imbalances, which is hugely detrimental to the U.S. economy. It's a real cancer on the U.S. economy. So it's a cancer on the Hollywood as well. And Hollywood is unwilling to. It's symbiotic. It's a what do they call that in New Wave speak? It's a codependent relationship between Walmart and Hollywood. They are embraced in a toxic embrace, and so they're unwilling to mess with Walmart to sell these DVDs. DVD sales, however, are tanking. And you've got the rise of free downloads available on the web that are sucking up people's time. There's only 24 hours a day. If we end up spending 3 or 4 hours watching free material on the web, that's 3 or 4 hours we're not going to spend buying pay per content. And it's just that's the way it goes. And this is what's cutting into that model. And this is, you know, Hollywood, even today, they're talking about the fact that they think that this current wave of YouTube. You know, they think some Hollywood executive is quoted saying YouTube, they think, is a fad. You know, it's just kind of a fad. It won't last. You know, this car thing, this combustion engine thing, that won't last either, they were saying 100 years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing, though, that Walmart story is likened to what we saw in Democracy Now! Yesterday with FCC Commissioner Copps, who was very much making a pointed argument that what is going on with the broadband and internet industry in America should be a disgrace, and every American should be concerned about it, in that a few monopolies, the Ma Bells and the likes of those, and they're trying to shut down the internet, basically. They don't want any sort of advancement. And you see that how America's rapidly plummeting down the scales of internet availability and broadband penetration. They're number 16 in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the fourth worst in terms of children in America who have actually even used a computer. But he used the good analogy. He's saying that what it is right now is that the tubes, the wires through which the internet runs,
mm-hmm.
are dumb, and the end users are what gives it intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And the monopolists are now trying to change that. They want to control the intelligence and the knowledge and keep it locked in the tubes and keep the end users dumb.
Yeah, of course. That's the TV model. The TV model is that the end users are dumb,
mm-hmm.
and there's a centralized monopoly media corporation in the center who's controlling things. The thing about the internet is that it's anarchistic in the pure sense of that word, that the power is on the periphery, and there is no centralized power. The center of gravity, the center of power, is constantly shifting depending on the tastes and the traffic of the community as a whole. And this mimics nature in many ways, and it mimics a more perfect economy in many ways. As we're seeing, BitTorrent mimics a more perfect economy. You know, photosynthesis to me is a perfect economic proposition.
This is the natural progress of empires and countries as well, because, you know, America's had the advantage for the last few decades in having these giant monopolies, and they could leverage their power around the world. But because Europe we're never really competing with U.S. corporations on world domination sort of thing. You have this internet flourishing here because we have state broadcasters and because the state already gives culture for free. So there were never these ingrained monopolies resisting progress.
Well, this is one of the tragedies in America, is that they argue against state control. You know,
yeah.
Small government,
yeah, yeah.
Small state. The libertarians say the state stinks.
Yeah.
But that's true sometimes, and it's not true other times. You know, the state, because of the state's participation, you have the best television industry in the world in the UK. It's a state-subsidized industry. It produces the best television in the world.
Yeah.
Here in France, you have state subsidies which show up in, you know, your local bread baker, your local bakery. As a result, France has the best bread in the world. That's because of the state. State controls the bread industry. You know, state control does not necessarily mean bad. It doesn't mean good either. You know, it's a mistake to think that the state has no role in fostering economic progress. Now, because of the ability for Hollywood to lobby Washington to keep out broadband in the U.S., the U.S., competitively speaking, is falling like a stone.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the difference between state control or a monopoly control? It's the same thing. But monopoly control is more likely to want to prevent advancement.
Absolutely. You know, the state control, monopoly control, the same thing. Microsoft is effectively a state.
Mm-hmm.
It's a state of Microsoft. It's not a corporation in the sense of a... It's competing in a free market capitalist society. No, it's its own state.
It's a state called desktop.
Yeah, so it controls this state as a monopoly position, and it has thwarted progress on the software in America. And the telephone companies act as a state control. So when America says we're for reduced state, reduced government, but we're going to let these entrenched monopolist, huge multi-billion-dollar phone companies have their way without any regulations. That's a complete nonsensical thing to say. All you're doing is outsourcing your statism to a large telephone company. Doesn't mean you're anti-state. It just means that you want to get kickbacks and fees without doing any work whatsoever, which is what you have in America. You've got all these politicians in Washington who collect kickbacks, fees, bribes, graft. They don't actually do any work. They just take photo ops. They make a few little speeches. They kiss the babies. It's a huge subsidized welfare program for white guys who are media hogs and, you know, like to see their face on TV. Do they do anything? No, they just let the... They let the corporations do it all. Now, that's the same. What's the difference between that and Stalinist Russia, really? I mean, and the quality of life is dropping, as you would find in any communist country. In the communist country, quality of life deteriorated. In the U.S., the quality of life is deteriorating. Their broadband access is sinking like a stone. They have no health care. 40 million people with no health care because the state simply throws it over to the private companies, and the private companies decide that, well... we're going to keep all the money for ourselves, and we're not actually going to offer anyone any health care. Nobody gets insurance. Your house blows away or floods away in Hurricane Katrina. Yeah, we've changed the laws in the last 5 seconds. You don't get your insurance payback.
Even the next president of the United States, Bill Frist. And remember, if you go back a few weeks, we told you that Bill Frist is going to be the next president of the United States because KKR said he is going to be. That's where they put
the money. Colbert, Travis, and Roberts.
Yep. So he just returned from Guantanamo, where he said that the camp showed excellent prison conditions, including 24/7 medical care that is better, this is his quote, better than many Americans get.
Oh, that's reassuring.
So this is the American dream now, to get thrown into Guantanamo.
To get health care.
Exactly.
Well, that's why in the ghetto, a lot of people in the ghetto are looking to get arrested because they get 3 square meals a day and access to health care.
Exactly. Actually, that's a trend among old people as well. There was a crime spree a few years ago in Florida from old people, like 90-year-old people robbing banks in order to get thrown in jail.
Well, this is why people become peasants and work for the Lord as an indentured servant, because they get protection from the Lord.
Exactly. Well, that's the Lord does provide the slave with 3 meals a day, or at least one.
Mm-hmm. Who Bill Frist is talking about. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, Guantanamo Bay, they're in prison, but then we torture them, and they have no access to anything remotely considered as democratic civil rights. But they're better than most Americans.
Exactly. That's what he says. Your next president says this. So, you know, I guess that's the standard that Americans are willing to accept.
Well, it is. It is a standard that Americans are willing to accept. It goes back to this fundamentalism, which is, you know, the thing about fundamentalism, the point about fundamentalism that they made is that the problem is, and this was made by a rabbi on the show, is that you've got people, modern people, who are looking at ancient texts and making literal translations with no accountability for anything that happened 2, 3, 4, 5,000 years ago and today. So he said those ancient texts made sense for those people at that time.
That's what Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs said, very famous rabbi. Yeah.
Yeah, Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs, he's saying it made sense for them at that time. And that it doesn't make sense for people today at this time. It doesn't make sense. And to simply lift lines from ancient texts and apply them word for word to today, he said, is like nuclear fuel
without the insulation.
Without the insulation.
But he also pointed out that the printing press in some ways created this fundamentalism, because prior to the printing press, it was only the priests, but the scholars as well, who had understanding of the full text of the Bible or the Quran or the Torah. So this biblical knowledge was passed on to people via oral sermons.
Mm-hmm.
So they would always put it into context and use it as allegory. It was always used as allegory, not literal translations.
Right.
Because the words weren't important. It was the allegory at that time when you were speaking to a flock of people, mm-hmm. telling them like what the message is behind this. Now it's become a thing where people are sitting in their homes eating their donut and finding one sentence amongst millions of sentences which can apply to them and justify their actions. And they say, this sentence, look, this is what this is. I'll disregard every other sentence in the book in the context of the sentence.
Yeah. In other words, the Bible is basically a book of talking points.
Exactly. That and, you can select, yeah.
And the priest gets up there and he's got an allegory like Jonah is swallowed by the whale.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there's something happening in the community where this allegory applies. And it's a talking point. Yeah. You remember back in the Bible, Jonah was swallowed by the whale. And back then, we learned that this and that and the conditions. Well, think about today's time, blah, blah, blah. See, it's allegorical reference.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's in the hands of a professional religious person who's been to seminary or who's been studying religious texts their whole lives, they can then interpret these texts to a contemporary audience. And as you were saying, yeah, this is fascinating that the advent of the printing press and the availability of religious texts and put it in the hands of amateurs, basically.
Exactly.
So you've got millions and millions of people, amateur religious zealots.
Amateur religious zealots who don't know the history of what the time of Jesus, for example, was. The scholars would understand that at the time, how that language and what the allegory was actually referring to.
So you have amateurs out there, which when you think about it, this is what you think about the American political scene and the Bill Frists out there. Bill Frist comes to his religious convictions via political opportunism.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's not a religious person, he's just somebody who sees a large block of votes to go get.
Mm-hmm.
So he, reads the speed version of the Bible and gets the talking points and then lifts lines selectively that apply to his particular need as a politician on any given day. But he's an amateur at it, and it's extremely dangerous. And this is why the U.S. economy and the U.S. Ecology, run by religious amateurs, is being dragged into the mud.
Well, I was just thinking of that, your friend, we won't mention his name, but the one that has the... he has an electronic dictionary. Like, there are these evangelical dictionaries, they're electronic dictionaries, and all you do is say, you enter duck, and it'll tell you what you're supposed to think about duck. It's become that remote. You're not even required anymore to actually read the Bible. You just can get books of quotes that are relevant to what these politicians or whatever this ideologue wants you to think about or extract from the Bible.
Yeah, that's right. That was a fascinating lesson for me. I was with this buddy of mine from Hollywood, who's a fairly well-known actor, who had been born again, and he had a pocket dictionary. And you'd say something like, wow, look at the lighthouse over there. Isn't that nice? And he would type in lighthouse into his pocket biblical scripture generating machine, and it would give him scripture. And then he started to preach on that scripture.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a disembodied biblical gobbledygook.
Yeah.
In other words, any word at any time can be significant if you've got a nuclear weapon behind you.
Exactly.
And basically. Mm-hmm. It's gobbledygook powered by nukes. So speaking of fundamentalism,
Mm-hmm.
There's been some interesting activities on YouTube.
Well, apparently, web videos of made by Iraqi insurgents are being released on YouTube under comedy and entertainment, where they're showing American soldiers being picked off by snipers and blown up by improvised explosive devices. And tens of thousands of Americans have been watching this as entertainment and comedy, and perhaps not realizing that it is insurgent propaganda, according to Council on Foreign Relations, who are saying that they're actually real videos, and you can see the Iraqi insurgent insignia on the videos. And Americans are watching it as entertainment.
It's so strange. That's my first response. It's strange. I guess the context for me was back in the early 60s on your evening news with Walter Cronkite. They showed the body bags of the Vietnamese soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And in this current invasion scenario in Iraq, of course, the administration chose to insulate these images into ring fence these images, and that people were not allowed to see the coffins. They're not allowed to see any dead Americans over there.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So into this vacuum goes a few things. YouTube and Iraqi insurgents armed with cheap video equipment and the internet. So they fill the vacuum with these images. And that's as far as I've gotten with my thought about this.
Well, I'll pick up from there, because then you step into this fundamentalist nation of America, which doesn't really, they're not inquisitive. They have pocket dictionaries telling them what to think about things. So these guys are listing it under entertainment and comedy. So the Americans assume it's entertainment and comedy, and they view it as entertainment and comedy.
Mm-hmm. And they're slipping it in under entertainment and comedy, because there is no category, presumably, for Iraqi insurgents on YouTube at this time. Right? So they pick entertainment and comedy.
Well,
right? I mean, there's no category for that.
It just shows you how susceptible everybody is to this propaganda. Just by what you classify something as, those people are terrorists, we're the good guys, those are evil, we're good. And then any crime can be committed in your name as long as you say you're good. Well, this you can laugh at, American soldiers being killed by snipers, because it's listed under comedy.
Well, here's a question. Now, Rumsfeld has said that one of the reasons America's losing the war is that they're losing the media war.
Mm-hmm.
And he blames Arab television like Al Arabiya and Al Jazeera for broadcasting propaganda and images. Now, what does he have to say about YouTube? YouTube is an American company. It's 100 million videos viewed a day. It's a part of a total restructuring of the global media landscape in a way that's leaving America in the dust, because America is protectionistically protecting the Hollywood industry. They don't want to bring broadband into America because they're afraid people are going to be able to buy movies in ways that upset the copyright cartel in Hollywood and the association and affiliation with Walmart, etc. So they're purposely retarding that industry. Has been, people have been screaming about this. But when NASDAQ was at 5,000, there was an assumption that broadband would and delivery of content, which would continue to grow at 40% a year. And remember, they're laying down these glass fiber lines all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Hollywood successfully lobbied Washington to retard this explosive growth in broadband. And this is what triggered this collapse in NASDAQ in 2000, from 5,000 down to what it was, 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
But that growth is just gone offshore. It's gone out of the country. It's gone somewhere else. America, they're so wrong in so many areas. They're trying to bring so-called democracy into the Mideast while they are retarding technological development in their backyard. So they're losing on multiple fronts simultaneously. And it's just a confluence of horribly bad situations. It's just like, to me, I've always thought of it in this way, that in the U.S. back in 1776, there was a brilliant coincidence that brought together opportunity and brains. The founding fathers of America, unique generation, a unique group of men who came together, and they had this incredible opportunity to take their colonies and go west and create this country from sea to shining sea. It's a complete confluence of coincidences, opportunity. It's once in a gazillion year moment. And then you had in the year 2000, you had the flip side. There was an incredible confluence of coincidences. You had a rigged Supreme Court. You had a Republican candidate who was his father's son guy who was just kind of partially plugged into. And you had all these things collude and collide together to generate the Bush presidency of 2000, which is the absolute bookend of the 1776 period in American history. It's almost as if America was born in 1776 and died in 2000.
Yeah.
It's like Bush is America's mortician. That's his job, is to conduct a nice burial. that's what he's up to. And that's why he's so opaque. This is comments. It's like when you go to a funeral and you say, you know, to the mortician, gee, you know, the corpse, it looks so great. How did you manage that? They're just kind of give you a very cold, distant smile, like, keep moving, pass along. We've got other mourners here.
That's what the American fundamentalists want. They want the end. They want Armageddon now. They want the end.
Well, that's what it says in the scripture.
Yeah.
Now, in the Armageddon, if I remember my Bible, don't they try to convert the Jews at the end?
Yeah, yeah.
And the Jews who don't convert to Christianity are all murdered?
Yeah, but the Jews have their own, the same exact thought, but the opposite way. Remember, we in the fundamentalists, that woman Hava, who is one of the settlers in this illegal settlements in the West Bank, she was saying the same thing. She really wants Israel to go to try to expand to the Euphrates and Baghdad, because then the end will come, and you Catholics and you Protestants and you Muslims will have to convert to Judaism at the end. You'll recognize your mistake.
Right.
That's what bin Laden says. That's what Bush says. That's what, you know, Ariel Sharon said before he fell into a coma.
Right. And that's when it comes to the energy business. That's what Chevron says. That's what Exxon says. That's what British Petroleum says.
Uh-huh.
That there's pockets of oil that needs to be exploited. It's causing toxic waste that's killing people. But they've got a divine right under their charter with this fundamentalist president of these various countries to explore because it's in their genes and they have nothing stopping them and they don't care how many planets they destroy in doing it.
Exactly.
So you got on YouTube, you've got...
You got Americans watching comedies of their soldiers being blown up. The other...
Now, what's YouTube going to do about this? I mean, so far, they haven't decided that this is not, you know, what is it a problem on YouTube? Are they discussing it? Is it an issue? It seems to go against the State Department in America.
Well, it says that calls and emails to YouTube requesting an interview regarding the war videos went unreturned.
Uh-huh.
But the website's terms of use said they don't allow videos with nudity, graphic violence, or hate. So... they advise users who find violations to flag the videos and report them to YouTube, but obviously nobody has reported these to YouTube, so they didn't realize that they were on there. But I'll tell you who's laughing all the way to the bank.
Who?
BAE, the Europe's biggest weapons maker in Britain. Their profits rose 28% in the first half of the year on U.S. orders for Iraq.
All right, so they can make more YouTube videos?
Yeah, so you have, in America, Americans watching American soldiers being blown up as comedy. And in Britain, they're laughing as well.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Laughing all the way to the bank.
Right, because it's you know, I was conversing with this journalist in America who's been writing about use of virtual markets to predict terrorist acts, so-called terror futures market.
Mm-hmm.
Which the Pentagon released a while ago is the policy analysis market, and it's based on the virtual markets. And, of course, I have a good understanding of those markets. And you know, this is a point that came out, which I thought was interesting. The Pentagon, they want to do a virtual market to try to predict terrorist acts. And my point is that you are essentially incentivizing and monetizing these acts more than they are already. And there's no need to incentivize people to commit these acts any more than there already is. You already have a problem with people incentivized to create mayhem and murder. You don't need to incentivize them more by creating a market that drives ever more interest in dollars toward this end. BAE is already part of a terror futures market. They throw money into the region. They create a lot of terror, and it's all on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, it's just as easily the Pentagon could create the peace policy, the peace analysis market, just as easily.
Yeah.
Which tries to predict the rise of altruism, YouTube, file sharing, P2P, low open source, Linux. to try to put the emphasis, have people look at the possibility of altruism mm-hmm. instead of violence. They could just as easily do this. The way to fight violence is to get people thinking about peace. The way to fight violence is not to get people to think even more about violence.
Well, this is amazing. I'm reading the rest of that story about BAE profits rising 28% in relation to what you just said.
Yeah.
There's a guy, David Hart, an analyst at Fat Profits.
Yeah.
P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S.
Mm.
He says refitting Bradley, you know, armored tanks, will be a strong market for them for years to come.
Sure. Sure. I mean, this is what causes the violence, is that you're putting more and more money into creating and spreading and financing violence. So, of course, if you keep putting money into financing violence, you're going to have more violence. That's why creating a terror futures market to allow people to bet on what the next terrorist outcome will be, which is an idea of the Pentagon, mm-hmm. which now these journalists in America think is a really good idea, it only increases the violence. I mean, that should seem like a no-brainer. But, of course, you're talking about people who don't really see any value in peace at this point. There's no economic upside to peace. They don't see it that way. They only see value in economic return in war and everything related to war, which is predatory lending, obesity, loss of civil rights, building of prisons. This is the only thing they see is valuable at this time. And they don't see peace and love as having any value whatsoever in the economy. And that's just a choice that they make. That's a choice that they've made for themselves. And they're surprised then when the bad stuff happens. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you have to do too much explaining and shareholder meetings with the love or positive peace sort of stuff. You have to explain your actions, like you explain your growth model. Whereas with war, you just say, trust us. We know these people are bad. We can't tell you the information. We can't reveal it to you. But trust us, they're bad. And kill, 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 kill,
well,
kill,
yeah,
kill.
I mean, the church back in the Middle Ages said, you're going to go to hell unless you do what we tell you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you've done something bad, we'll give you a get-out-of-jail-free card with this papal indulgence. So they were the gateway to the moral authority, heaven and hell.
And if you don't support us and if you don't give us our tithes and all the money we demand of you, we will excommunicate you. And just as in America, they say, if you don't support our war efforts, if you don't support our invasion of Iraq, our invasion of Afghanistan, our invasion of Lebanon, our invasion of Gaza, then we're going to excommunicate you from the American community, from your community. We will call you, you know, anti-American.
Right. Now, starting with the 1500s and 1600s, you had the Protestant Reformation. Then you had Descartes come along, question the franchise of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And this led to the Enlightenment, which led to French Revolution, American Revolution, the rights of man, and a continuation of the Roman state of government by and for the people, representative democracy, which went up until the year 2000, when now that's been abandoned and back to the Middle Ages, where you've got in the U.S. and the U.K., and Tony Blair is a perfect example of this. Just trust me. I have information you don't have. Just trust me. Meanwhile, he's taking all the tax money and giving it to defense contractors, whose job it is to create wars. And then your only recourse, as people are saying, is, as was the comment made, that at this point, people in America are looking up at the prisoners on Guantanamo as the lucky few chosen. These
yeah.
are the chosen lucky ones who get meals and,
yeah.
and some kind of health care.
Yeah.
They're actually better off than those 40 million people out there without any health care, no jobs, wages are crashing.
You know, America's basically waiting just for Martin Luther to reappear and just say, don't trust us, trust yourself. There is no existential threat. The only existential threat is yourselves.
Well, this is where I think something like YouTube is, this is what's happening. I don't think there's going to be any one individual like a Martin Luther King, Jesus Christ, Gandhi. I think there's going to be a simultaneous awakening in the internet community, which is the BitTorrent community, which is a free altruistic community. And they'll have a simultaneous, people will just have a dawning of this. They'll have an awakening that, wait a minute. This is our economy. This is our world. And so I think you're going to have this sudden, like when you know, like when the rain hits the desert and you have a sudden burst of wildflowers on seeds that have been dormant for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is what I see YouTube and these free file sharing and P2P networks. This is what it's all about, is that they're hooking up all these seeds that have been dormant for 20 years. There's going to be a huge rain that comes, mm-hmm. like hitting the desert. and a simultaneous, spontaneous combustion of flowers, wild flowers, wild orchids, wild, unkept intellects zipping around the universe, zipping around the internet, interacting, commingling, giving birth to new thoughts, unprotected by copyright cartels. They'll trash the copyright cartels. This is what I think is going to happen, really. I mean, I'm somewhat optimistic because I think that time is coming. I see my own vision on the horizon. It's not death and destruction as the Judeo-Christian tradition is expecting, pure death and destruction.
Mm.
This is a internet-led boomlet of creativity that's going to blow fundamentalism out of the water. And I think it's happening right now. It's going to happen. This YouTube thing, I keep coming back to it. I think YouTube is the most significant thing to happen to humanity since fire.
Wow, that's a big statement, honey.
Fire was something that created the campfire. It created the social gathering.
Uh-huh.
It created the notion, you know, because fire is very interesting because it burns and burns and burns, but it's self reinforcing effectively. It's
it kept you safe as well from all those monsters out there.
I see intellectual fire burning on the internet, burning down the fundamentalist Judeo-Christian, and even now the Buddhist monks. They're in the penalty box.
Wow.
They're out there killing people in the name of fundamentalist, Buddhist fundamentalism.
Yeah.
The Hindus are killing people in the name of Hindu fundamentalism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard these stories about Hindu fundamentalists and the Tamil Tigers and Sri Lanka and what's happening in that. I never really put all the pieces together. I didn't realize that the Hindus had become militant, nationalistic, BNP type, Jean-Marie Le Pen type, neo-fascist type.
And, you know, their party is the BJP, which was the one that was in power before Sonia Gandhi's government. And remember, the U.S. Bankers punished them for kicking out BJP.
Right.
So the bankers love fundamentalists, and they encourage it, and they punish you if you're not fundamentalist, because otherwise BAE profits won't rise 28% in a quarter.
That's exactly right. Of course, the bankers love fundamentalism because hate is a very profitable business.
It's easier to manipulate.
Well, the margins on hate are higher.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can sell through paranoia and fear people to buy a tank where the markup is 40-50%.
Well, 400%.
The markup is a lot better for a tank than it is on a Volkswagen.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or a General Motors Cadillac. And the markup's like 3%, 2%, or negative markup. They're losing for every unit they sell, they lose. You know, General Motors and these car companies are losing on every unit they sell. They're kept on life support from government subsidies. So the tank business, they got big margins. The only thing you need to keep saying that business is to make sure you got wars going on. So great, we'll get the Pentagon to antagonize some countries, get into a war, and sell lots of tanks. This is how it works. I mean, now the only way to fight it is to is what's happening on the internet. The internet network. Now, as you point out, the FCC guy who was on democracynow.org yesterday was one of the best spokespeople for the value of the internet I've heard in a long, long time. The very simple, he talked about anarchy in its purest state.
And democracy, he said, yeah, it is democracy and anarchy in its purest state.
The value is on the periphery, and there is no center.
Yeah.
This is what the internet's all about. In a state-controlled or monopolistic-controlled model that you have dominating in the U.S. and the U.K. right now, then the periphery is dying and dead. It's made of stupid nodes, of stupid consumer obese nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the inversion of life. It's the inversion of democracy. It's the inversion of civilization. It's the rejection of God, really. I mean, anyone who has any belief in God would recognize the beauty of YouTube.
Well, we can go through the South, honey, and try to convince people of that. Well, they're fundamentalists, though. They don't want to hear anything. They've already made up their mind that they want to die, and they want all of you to die with them.
Well, it's always a fight for the young.
Yeah.
You know, the young is their minds haven't been hard-coded yet.
Mm.
But this is why advertisers are constantly going down the umbilical cord. You know, the huge market in the 60s were the teenage market, yeah, which was a new youth market. And, you know, there was no such thing as a youth market. There was babies and then adults. Then there was the awkward period in between, and nobody saw that as a market. Then rock and roll came along and said, wait a minute, there's a huge market here, which led to the explosion of commerce in that age group. Then you had the tweens, which are between the 12 and 13-year-olds, became a huge market. Now you've got a baby market, baby Gap, baby this, baby that. There's a huge market in baby clothes, baby consumers. Next will be fetuses. I fully see how fetuses are going to be actively marketed to through the umbilical cord. They're already marketed to when the mother drinks Coca-Cola and junk food. They're already addicting their poor babies to the crack of American junk food.
I can imagine AOL or Coca-Cola saying, kick once for yes, kick twice
for Diet Coke. Kick once for regular, twice for diet.
And they'll have proof. They'll say, we have this little sonar image of your baby kicking twice, and we know for a fact he ordered the Diet Coke, and here's the bill.
And Bill Frist will be there and said, I read your infant baby, your prenatal baby's mine, your fetal baby's mine.
Yep.
And they said they ordered Diet Coke, and here's the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the important thing, is that the step that needs to be taken is you've got to get a wireless line down the umbilical cord into the womb in order to start getting these fetuses shopping.
The Wi-Fi baby network.
Right, because they'll find out that babies, the brains, you know, the fundamentalists will say, you know, we discovered that we're against abortion because babies can shop, and they're shopping in droves, and they're keeping the U.S. economy alive. They're buying cigarettes and beer.
Well, we're against abortion because it's illegal if your baby owes me $10,000 so far. And I want to collect on that debt. So
that's a good point. The people who are anti-abortion should be the ones pushing for baby debt,
mm-hmm.
because corporate America then would outlaw abortion,
exactly.
because there would be no other way to collect that debt.
Uh huh.
Fetal debt.
You're not going to escape this debt, dude.
You're not going to escape this debt. So then you'll have babies actually aborting themselves to escape the debt.
Yeah.
It'll be fetalicide.
Yeah, and it'll be a struggle between them and Bill Frist, who will keep them on a life support system. I've got you.
We want that money.
You little 2-month-old baby.
How much money did Terry Schiavo owe for all those years of being hooked up to the feeding tube?
Exactly.
The hospital didn't want to see her go.
She was surviving on Medicare.
Well, the battle's going into the womb, of course, because it's going backwards through time. And I think this is ultimately the plot of The Matrix, because everything happens in they plug the womb into the giant computer. And then Joe Pantoliano, he's willing to sell out his compadres for a nice, fat, juicy steak.
Honey, what? We're going to have to go soon.
Why?
I know, exactly. Because this is the way things happen. But I want to close with one thing. I want to ask your thoughts.
Bush is America's mortician. That's my favorite line of the day.
Okay, that'll be the
America's
name.
Bush is America's mortician.
How about this? Philanthropy. Google's way,
yeah,
which is not the usual. The ambitious founders of Google, the popular search engine company, have set up a philanthropy, giving it seed money of about $1 billion and a mandate to tackle poverty, disease, and global warming. But unlike most charities, this one will be for profit, allowing it to fund startup companies, form partnerships with venture capitalists, and even lobby Congress. It will also pay taxes.
Right.
This is the opposite of what Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are putting their money towards. They have tax-free charities where they give to their favorite industries.
Yeah,
why not pay the taxes? Why not?
Yeah, but by being tax exempt, you give up a lot of your rights.
Exactly.
You want to pay taxes.
Well, it makes sense because when you go to this, one of Google's maiden projects reflects the philanthropy's non-traditional approach. According to people briefed on the program, the organization called Google.org plans to develop an ultra-fuel-efficient plug-in hybrid car engine that runs on ethanol, electricity, and gasoline. And now, if they succeed in making this work, they'll be able to start selling this and derive income from it.
Right.
Whereas Bill Gates and that traditional way of charity is just give, and then you can't keep it. You can't create a new model where the lords will give to you, peasant.
Yeah, it's Bill Gates has got $60 billion worth of Band-Aids.
Yeah.
And Google is actually reinventing the wheel.
Exactly.
In philanthropy. I mean, this is the argument we had with Greenpeace, of course. You know, we went to Greenpeace and here's an organization that's tax-free. And the question is, why? Why not? You know, I think the answer is that when these groups like Greenpeace and the environmental movement came to be in the 70s, tax rates were a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
Now, since the 70s, tax rates have come down dramatically. So the tax burden now, from where it was, is a lot less, but they've never really adjusted their thinking accordingly. The tax burden is not what it was back 20, 30 years ago. And it doesn't make you give up too much by being tax-free. You give up too much, like we were saying before, for example, tax-free charities can't hire lobbyists.
Mm-hmm.
Taxable, tax-paying charities can hire lobbyists. Well, that means that they have now a seat at the table in Washington lobbying game.
Yes, so this is what they said. They're going to use lobbyists now to combine with this Google.org developing an ultra-fuel-efficient plug-in hybrid car. They're going to use lobbyists to lobby Congress to pass stricter laws and to offer tax advantages to people who buy these kind of cars.
Right. So there you have Friends of the Earth and these other groups who are raising money to hire lawyers to sue companies for emitting carbon,
mm-hmm.
and they get caught up in the lobbying groups, and never nothing changes.
Yep.
Here they're saying, well, you know what we're going to do is we're going to be taxable. We're not going to focus on war like Rumsfeld. We're going to focus on peace. We're going to focus on altruism. We're going to focus on ecological sustainability. And just by that change of focus, 180 degrees from death to life, we're going to take the conversation in a new direction. That's really required. Now, what do they have really ultimately as their main weapon is hundreds of millions of Google users who can be mobilized on the drop of a hat. They can put out an email from Sergey or whoever who runs Google, the two founders.
Sergey.
And just say, hey, Google user, you like using Google, right? Yeah, I use it every day. Well, here's the deal. We got a deal for you. We want you to send an email to this congressman who's blocking our ability to get this hybrid car through, and send him, and they'll say, and next day, a billion emails, 500 million faxes, and 30,000 letters arrive in the post. You see?
Mm-hmm.
They've got an army out there. It's the Google army. It's the Google, just like eBay's got an army.
They could use that with their gmail.com. Like, I have a Gmail account, and they could just say, here's a ready-made email that we wrote for you. You don't have to do any work but send it. If you want, or
that's
discard
right.
it.
That's right. Now, people, of course, you have to legitimize where the people are from, that their addresses are accurate and things like that. So you get into this privacy issue. Do you really want your details provided? Well, here's the deal on that. If Microsoft's running the IT infrastructure, no, because Microsoft will sell this information to anyone with a nickel and a gun. You know, they don't have any kind of moral mandate over there. But obviously, Google is building up some goodwill here by saying we're going to amass our mass audience and our massive wealth to point the conversation in a new direction. And so you might say, you know, by the way, we're going to create a Google identity verification adjunct to Gmail. You know, give us his details, and we will keep your information out of the clutches of mass marketers and Karl Rove. And you might say, well, okay, they have a good track record. They have some goodwill. I'm willing to, you know, possibly go down that path. So they're building up. You know, who else has that ability? Can any politician in America say, we want you to give us all your personal details, trust us? You know, we won't manipulate the market. We won't manipulate you. We won't manipulate the media. We won't manipulate people's religious fanaticism to get people in office who are going to support corporate jihadists. Of course, the answer is no. But Google, being a nation state of its own, $60 billion company, soon, you know, it's going to be a $600 billion company soon. These two founders are going to be the first global trillionaires. You know, yeah, it's possible. They've got it. They're young. They're ambitious. They got lots of, they got a good mojo. They got the mojo working.
I'm sure we'll get many emails on that. But we're going to have to go now, honey.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
I know.
Well. Adios, muchachos. Send us one of them bigger chips for our eater roll. We'll do bigger shows.
Okay. Bye-bye.